Hey, how's it going? Before we begin, I want to take a minute to thank everyone who's supported the Discovering Bitcoin podcast by sending, streaming, and boosting precious Satoshis via value for value apps like Fountain and Breeze, or Zaps via Nosta. Hearing tales of discovery and recording episodes of this podcast keeps me sane, and your support motivates me to keep going more than you will ever know. Thank you. Are you new to discovering Bitcoin, the network, the asset, the money? Do you want to get up to speed on self-custody, join the evolution, and know how to hodl your Bitcoin safely, securely, and simply? Discover the Bitcoin Advisor, a dedicated team of proper Bitcoiners, hardcore, ardent maximalists, whose sole purpose is to help you to discover Bitcoin, steer well clear of shitcoins, take self-custody, become sovereign, and ensure that you feel confident every step of the way. Click through to the BitcoinAdvisor.com link located in the show notes and tell them DJ from Discovering Bitcoin sent you. Your first month's free when you do.
Can you explain why Bitcoin is such an attractive financial tool?
Because it is somewhat anonymous, not fully, and because you can move money instantaneously.
So the one thing we can count on is discovery. Bitcoin goes forward in the year 2024.
In the immortal words of the Doors,
12, 11, 10,
the time to hesitate
9,
is through.
Ignition sequence start.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
All engine running.
Joe, Martin, how you going, man?
I'm good, JD. Thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure.
It's DJ, brother. It's all good.
It's
like Scrubs.
Let's start that again.
Nah, fuck that. No edits. It's all good. It just reminds me of... I don't know if you're a Scrubs fan, but there's a scene in Scrubs where it's the barman and he said, Turk and JD go in, they're the two doctors, trainee doctors in this show. And it's like, it's Turk and JD and JD.
Yo, there he is. For a second, I thought you weren't coming, dude.
Hey, it's Turk and JD and JD.
Yeah. So if any Scrubs fans out there listening to that, they might get the reference. That's
why I did it. I just did it for all the Scrub fans out there.
God bless, man. That's very thoughtful. How you doing, man?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I'm dead busy. Had a lot of Bitcoin related stuff at the moment going on. I've just come back from Madeira, which was insane. Like probably the best week of my life, hands down.
Oh, wow.
It was just incredible. Bit of a whirlwind. Yeah, still kind of coming down off that high. There's a UK Bitcoin thing going on in a couple of days in Nottingham, little Bitcoin festival, which I've been invited to play at, which is going to be fun.
Oh, wow.
And releasing new music's on the horizon. So I've got a tour, UK tour coming up. So I've just got my head down, busy.
I've received a little bit of feedback, not much, from people that, like, you never introduce your guests. You always just say hello and then you just start talking and you, like, expect us to know who you're talking to. And it's like, well, yeah, I don't know. Read the liner notes or something read the show notes. I don't know. But,
brief background.
You're a UK musician. You're a UK musician based in the UK. And you're at the vanguard of effectively value for value music creation, whereby you post your songs online at apps like Wavelake, which I'm enamored with at the moment. And people that listen to your tunes, if they dig them enough, they'll send you sats. It's stream you sats, boost you sats. Obviously, people are familiar with that with respect to podcasting 2.0. But this is a whole new ball game that you're at the vanguard of. It's unreal.
Yeah. Well, this kind of idea has blossomed from the podcasting world, podcasting 2.0 sort of thing. I mean, yeah, like Adam Curry, the Podfather, the legend. He's also been pushing this idea of, you know, mixing RSS and podcasting with the Lightning Network, pairing the two open protocols together. And yeah, I mean, RSS has been around for like over 25 years now, which is crazy. But music has never found its way into like RSS because I don't really know why. I guess there was no need for it, or people didn't see a need for it. And kind of now that this pairing with the Lightning Network has happened, like it seems to be making sense. And these platforms like Wavelake and Fountain and others are popping up to do a similar thing to the podcasting 2.0. But I mean, Wavelake is focused exclusively on music, which I quite like because like I listen to all my music in one place. I like it. An app just dedicated to music when I listen. And as an artist, you can just tell people to go there, find all your music there. So it's early days, but it's a lot of fun to be part of it.
It's early days. And there's like I speak for myself here, a sense of impatience. I noticed whenever people online, like James Blake, who's musician, he had a couple of hits, wow, like indie kind of vibey hits back in the early, he's a very mournful, depressing person to actually listen to be honest, James Blake. But he was on some Twitter screed the other week talking about how it's unfair that artists aren't getting paid X amount and stuff, and it actually seemed to come about all quite there was a bit of universal alignment because Rick Beato has posted something on his YouTube channel to that effect and has mentioned a little bit. And then Luke Combs as well was talking about it. Something to do with 1,500 streams equals one album sale approximately on Spotify. So you have to listen to this artist 1,500 times before it even equates to one whole album sale. And the math that he ran was something like you might get, if you're a songwriter back in the 90s and you wrote a hit, or even if you didn't write a hit, but your song appeared on that hit album, you would get paid something like 10 cents per album sale. And if you sold, what was it like? I'm not going to do maths on air here, but it was a very viable way of making money and making that craft, you know, receive the sufficient value for it. Whereas nowadays, obviously, everything gets dematerialized, the marginal cost of production goes to zero, and unless you are an aggregator, like Spotify is or Apple Music is, or an aggregator of information like Twitter is and that sort of thing, they're the new gatekeepers. They're the ones that you have to move through and get over that hurdle rate in order to get some sort of value for your content or whatever it is that you produce, that craft, that creativity. And this whole Wavelake phenomenon and value for value and putting music through RSS feeds and stuff is just turning all that on its head, right? And your music, you've been doing stuff with like Richard Real or Real Richard. And what was it, Ray? What was that song? I was listening to it this afternoon, man.
Rising Free.
Thank you.
With Man Like Quacks and Richard,
Like, I mean, I gotta be upfront. The nascent music, sort of Bitcoin related music, kind of irritates me a little bit because it's like it's. I can't imagine that they wrote songs about like gold back in the, do you know what I mean? Like, I get it. Like, it's all propaganda and we're trying to infect the culture with these things.
Yeah.
And the thing is like, it almost suffers, the quality of the music itself, the harmonic composition, all that stuff suffers because you're trying to squeeze Bitcoin into the lyrics or something like that. And it just comes off a bit cringe. But that song is actually really fucking cool. And it's particularly towards the end, like it actually G's you up a little bit with that, those questions, those rhetorical questions that you spit out right at the end there. Yeah, as far as Bitcoin related songs go, that's up there with my favorite.
Oh, nice. I appreciate that. Yeah, I didn't want to, I don't really want to go down that route of just singing about Bitcoin. I mean, it's kind of like, it's not something anyway that a lot of people, just in the general public, kind of relate to and resonate with. Like, I just want to write about the universal topics and basically just kind of promote Bitcoin through the lens of value for value.
Yes.
You know, I don't go around telling people to buy Bitcoin or what they should be doing in that respect. There's a lot of better people than me that can talk about the economics and philosophical side of it and stuff. I leave that up to you, Saifedeans and Breedlove and all that kind of stuff. But I just basically try to use the approach of value for value and these platforms that are enabling this new type of online commerce and like distribution of music and monetization of music. And mainly, like, I bring it up to artists that I think might be ready to hear it. I think it's still too early to really start pushing it to my fans and like the public, because there's no easy on-ramp into the ecosystem yet to like get people from, you know, their fiat to Lightning sats, to sats on Lightning Network to send. Still too early for that. It will come, it will happen. But from the artist's perspective, to just like upload their music to one extra place where it's free to upload anyway, and they have the potential to make more than they would on Spotify or anything else, that's quite an easy sell if the person is ready to hear it and is ready to just take the next step. I don't have a great conversion rate, because like when they ask me what it's about and I'm like, oh, well, you got to use Bitcoin, and they're a bit like, right, okay. They're like, oh, I'll think about it. And then you don't hear from them again. It's fine. Like, it's fine.
That's the life of an orange pill, bro.
Yeah, I'm just worried that like people may have just heard like so many horror stories in the news about, you know, they conflate Bitcoin with shit coins, and they're like, oh, crypto, they bundle it all into one thing, and they're like, oh, it's a scam. And like, you know, I don't want to come across as like someone that's trying to peddle something or push something. It's just like, it's not that at all. It's not. And that's as well, the NFT thing is like gotten into the picture, and that's all convoluted. And
yeah, it's, I mean, that's very muddy.
That's an absolute mess, you know, like what. It's like, no, it's very simple. You put your music out, and if people like it, they can give you something back of value.
Right.
That's it. Like, there is no strings attached. There's no catch. Like, it's very simple. And I think people just, because it is so simple. It's like, is that it? Like, and it's like, there must be something else here.
Yeah.
And basically, the only way that this has happened is it's just a breakthrough in technology that's now allowed it to happen. But I think like so many artists, and you're seeing it more and more, like you said on Twitter, all these big artists are now coming out, but you know, these small indie artists, we've just been beaten down and just so jaded and just like given up hope that it's like the music industry is so screwed up. Right. Like nothing, we're screwed. It's never going to be fun.
Well,
you know, it's really bad. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, like, I was watching, I watch a little bit of Rick Beato and his YouTube channel. I find a lot of value there, but he had a Steve Lukather on, who's a guitarist famous for like playing the riff out of Beat It. You know, Michael Jackson, and obviously had the band Toto and played with, you know, he was a session muso, right? But he's played on all of these incredible songs and has contributed riffs and melodies and phrases and all this sort of stuff to all of these world famous, timeless classic songs. And he gets paid for the session and that's it. And right, he was talking on this interview, and I was trying to find the spot just before we jumped on air to see if I could get the numbers, but I couldn't. But he was sort of, every now and then, he'd just sort of skew off into this sort of bemoaning of the, you know, he was part of the musicians union from the 70s, and like he's on this piddly little pension And has retained almost zero value and gets no royalties or anything from any of that, any of those songs. Like, there was a track, by Michael Jackson. What's that song? I'm not even going to sing it. I can hear the melody. I can't think of the song. It's something to do with, Human Nature. That's the track. It's Human Nature.
Okay.
And there's like a guitar line in that, that he contributed to, cause all they had was just like the chords. And he came up with this riff effectively that kind of almost makes the song. But he just got paid for the session and that's it. And those are the rules, fine, whatever. But if even in the 70s and 80s, and Steve Lukather is Steve Lukather and would have made a decent amount of coin maybe from like his other songs and hits that he wrote through Toto and all that sort of stuff. But if even he's sort of bemoaning the fact that he's a struggling musician at whatever the age is he is now, and he grew up in the golden age and era of this shit, how are indie artists today, or any musician for that matter, or any creative, because the marginal cost of production has gone down to zero, so anyone can buy a microphone and a recorder and start a podcast and call it whatever the fuck they want, which is what I did, you know, and just join the gaggle of noise.
Yeah, well, no, you hear so many horror stories like that of people that kind of were screwed over in the industry. I mean, yeah, I guess a song is defined as the melody and the lyrics. So, but I mean, take a song like Beat It, for instance. That guitar riff, like you said, that makes the song.
It's iconic.
So I guess like it would have been on him to like negotiate that at the time.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think he come up with necessarily wrote that riff, but there was a couple of like I think it was the there's like a bit of a funk, bam bam, that bit. He kind of contributed that those chord changes and a few other bits and bobs. But yeah, you're right. Like at the time, negotiate all that stuff. But the beautiful thing is like what we're talking about with respect to this value for value is that you're getting paid in a money that is designed to appreciate in value over time. Whereas he would have been paid in this money that is literally designed to depreciate in value over time and devalue over time. So if this thing catches fire, which I personally believe it inevitably will, once the puzzle pieces are all in the right spot, all of the work that you're doing now, all of the sats that are getting streamed to you now, they may not be life-changing, but I don't know, man. Like I was looking at the Jetsons track on there. There's over 250,000 sats that have been streamed to you already on that track. I mean, give it 20 years, that ain't nothing to sneeze at. You know, that's a recording studio.
It's going to be a weird phenomena because of the sort of hyper deflationary nature of Bitcoin, that like all the biggest zapped or whatever tracks maybe will be now, you know, the next few years, and it will just get harder and harder for a track to get that many sats in the future. Like
but the sats will be worth more, like
Ainsley Costello had the first million sat song on Wavelake, and like I think 10 years from now that will be headline news, maybe. I don't know. It could be, you know, if someone gets a million sats on a song, that'll be a big deal in like 10 years.
Can you imagine? I mean, it's just extraordinary. So this is the thing, like it's so nascent, and as I said, you're at the vanguard, you're literally at the tip of the spear of this thing. And I guess I'm going to come to my first question at some point and sort of bring it back to the format of the pod. But the tightrope, I guess, that you're walking is that you're leveraging this technology in order to make it more viable and valuable than it otherwise would be, right? But you also don't want to fall into the I'm the Bitcoin musician guy. Like you want to be a musician first and have your songs speak for themselves. And then it's just like this complimentary thing. Like you can stream your sats if you want.
Yeah, and I'm under no illusions that like value for value is going to make up any meaningful part of my income stream at the moment. Maybe in like 5 years to 10 years, maybe. There's just so few people on there at the moment. It's impossible to even have that expectation. And I think, yeah, so that firstly, that's, you know, that's what I'm thinking. But I'm doing it more out of principle than anything, really, because like I might sound like a broken record, like saying this over and over again on podcast, but it's really important to say that, you know, if anyone should be making any money from this, like my songs, it should be me, basically. Yes. It shouldn't be Spotify. It shouldn't be any of these other intermediaries, these platforms that are, I get why that, you know, they exist. They just exist because that's the way the world has evolved. I'm not saying they're malicious, but they are in a way like parasitical because they are like feeding on the energy of all the artists that are producing this work that aren't getting paid for it.
Yep.
So if anyone should be getting paid, it's the artist. And it makes complete sense for that value just to go direct from the listener to the artist with no one in the middle. And that hasn't been possible until now. So it's like, it is a big breakthrough. But yeah, it is more of a principled thing why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Than the money. Like the money's secondary, it's cool. Like it's really exciting when you see some sats land in your wallet. It's such a good feeling because it means that like you feel like you've done a good job as well. You know, you've got to hold yourself to like a certain level where with the music that you put out that like, right, is this valuable? Like, are people going to want to part with their sats for this? It's even more than fiat, like a higher bar than fiat, you know?
Exactly. So yeah.
Are people going to want to part with their precious sats for this song that I've done? Are they going to see value in it? So you always want to push yourself to be better. But yeah, that's the thing. And I kind of want to like just get that message of like you to other artists, like you should be making the money from your music, not Spotify. So like take control of your work back and, you know, take control of your own destiny, like to your own hands, like start using these tools because they work. And I just kind of want to maybe even just be a showcase that it can work and it is working. Even if like I don't make it or quote unquote make it, whatever that means, like if I'm sort of forgotten in the next 10 years, whatever, like if I can at least have like moved the needle a little bit and like got the next wave of artists interested, then I think I'll have done my job because it is really important that this, you know, happens and gets out there because like I said, people are just so disillusioned with how the industry is going. It's a real mess and there needs to be something done about it, or like there's going to be no new artists coming through. Like,
well, people, yeah, the music today, and I can say this is an objective fact, in almost said in my opinion, it's an objective fact, the mainstream pop music today is shit. It's garbage.
Yeah.
It's completely devoid of any interest, whether it's with respect to harmony, melody, composition, lyrical content. It's just shit. You have to look outside of, you know, I went and saw Snarky Puppy about a week ago or something. And, you know, like I discovered those guys about 10 years ago. So they're kind of like my last hope of like an actual decent bunch of musicians, and there's more, of course, I know, but you turn on the radio and it's hell. It's a hellscape of just monotone nonsense, and yeah. So that's refreshing to see these wave, like, because a lot of the artists that are on there too, they're already they're on wavelengths, so that's almost signal that like you're at least going to have a decent composition going to your ears than you otherwise would with anything else. What I'm curious to know is, because with someone like Taylor Swift, who has re-recorded all of her tracks and owns the masters now, which is a shrewd move, like if there's anyone that's based out there enough to do that, maybe she's based enough to discover Bitcoin and start this value for value thing. I don't know, a boy can dream, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I should be a bottoms up. indie artists first, and then all the other bigger artists maybe cottoning on later, because it will just, it's like not even worth their while at the moment because it's so small.
It's tiny.
But it is worth the while of an indie artist that's making nothing anyway on Spotify.
Totally. Well, so do you play, when you're playing your gigs, do you put like a QR code or some sort of sign up to have people? Because I'd imagine like busking, right? You, instead of like having your guitar case out, you could literally have a QR code, and obviously the hit rate for any Bitcoiner wandering by at that moment. But if you, like you're saying, you're playing at Bitcoin Atlantis, you're up on stage, there's no reason for you to not have a QR code with an audience full of Bitcoiners, and then all of a sudden they're just streaming you sats into your wallet straight away. Bang.
Yeah, well, we did do that.
Perfect.
I think me and the band got sent like 100 quids worth of sats or something like that. So I split them up equally between them before we left. Got them all the wallet, gave them the first sats, which was cool.
That's cool.
And in the next couple of days at the event in Nottingham, I'll be doing something similar. So yeah, like you said, it only makes sense in an environment with Bitcoiners with some sats in the wallet at the moment. But I think the live value for value thing is very interesting.
Mm.
But I can see in the future when everyone is, onboarded, like a sort of festival where maybe it's a free festival. Well, not free, but like maybe you pay a very basic entry fee. And you go around from stage to stage, a few stages, and you go and listen to the band on the stage. And they have a lightning address or a QR code behind them. And like it is kind of like a value for value thing in real life.
Yeah.
And maybe this interactive thing where if you send stats, you can send a comment and it comes up, or like great song, whatever. Behind the band, and you can see it in real time. Like
instant
the money
real time feedback.
That would be kind of cool.
Because
like if you had an audience of like 1,000 people, the festival, and like on average they sent $1 each or £1 each or whatever, it's pretty good, right?
Man, but for the grace of capital, go I. I mean, if I had my way, I would be establishing these types of like little events, festivals, and getting these things happening, because as you say, like there's just an enormous amount of value to be found. And least of all, I think it's a great way to onboard new people to the value prop of Bitcoin, because they can see the joy that it brings the artist in real time. The artist can see it, like it's all complementary. And it's all just a really nice cooperative, real-time networking relationship thing where you can literally onboard people to Bitcoin and this better money, whether they're in the audience or up on the stage. This is all a very nascent conversation, and maybe one day this will all happen if we're lucky.
That was like my main takeaway from Madeira. Just how early it is, because I was surrounded by Bitcoiners and like people were saying, why are you here? Like, what are you doing at the conference? And I said, I'm playing at the festival. I said, I'm doing a talk on value for value. And they were like, what's value for value? I said, well, like the Fountain app or Wavelake, and you can stream sats for music and podcasts. They were like, oh, I've never heard of that. And this is Bitcoiners, like if anyone should have known, it should be them. Like, but so many, I had to explain to so many people, and I was like, okay, download Fountain. Like, and I had to I sent them some sats to the Fountain wallet, and then they could start streaming podcasts and music, and they'd be like, oh, this is amazing. Like,
nah, man, everyone's a scammer. You're sending Bitcoin to Bitcoiners who don't understand value for value.
Man, it blew my mind. So I was like, right. Like it's a niche within a niche. Like it's so small. So I'm not worried. I'm kind of like just thinking this is a time thing, really. In the next few years, it'll when the on ramps and the UX and everything just gets better and better, it will be so compelling for people to just switch or to add, as well as Spotify, add Wavelake into the mix. Or something similar, it will just be like a no-brainer. So
how did you discover Bitcoin?
I discovered Bitcoin through a friend that mentioned it, and I had a million questions. They couldn't answer any of them. So I was like, right, okay, well, maybe I will take a look at it. Got embroiled in shit coins like everyone does, well, like a lot of people do. Had to figure that out, figure out the difference. Just got stuck into podcasts. And like during COVID, when, you know, there was nothing to do but just sit at home, lost all my work. And I was like, right, this is messed up. Like, how are they printing so much money? What's this going to do? Like the same questions that a lot of people had. And then, yeah, just like read the Bitcoin Standard and the rest is history. Because that book just blew my mind. And yeah, I've kind of been learning and interested ever since. And I was on the sidelines, you know, watching how the Lightning Network was developing. And then when I came across this idea of value for value, which I first heard on Kevin Rook's podcast, which was exclusively a Lightning podcast, I think he had Oscar on there, Oscar Merry from Fountain, talking about what Fountain was going to do, podcasting and Lightning together in this app. I thought, oh, that's super interesting. I downloaded the app as soon as it came out and started playing around with it, and then discovered Adam Curry as well and all his stuff. And then I think it was 2022, October 2022, I was going to bring out my next song. And I thought, okay, well, I could put it on Spotify like I just do with all my songs. Or what if I try to get it on the Fountain app? And at that time, it was just podcasting. But I was like, well, why can't I get a song on there as a podcast? You know, it's just audio.
Right.
So I figured out how to do that. Upload the song as a podcast. And then I went on Stacker News, said, oh, I'm thinking of doing this with a song, you know, and people can send sats if they use the Fountain app, because it's going to be on there. Well, it was on every podcasting app because it's RSS, right? So It showed up everywhere. But I think at that time, Fountain was the only value-enabled app. And then made like 100 quid in a week or something, which is just like just stupid because you don't make that much, you know, years on Spotify because it takes so many streams. And that was like a real mind-blown moment where I thought, well, I was kind of like just blown away and like amazed. And then I got angry because I was like, hang on a minute. People have sent me this for one song in a week. Like, what's like, what value is being missed out on because of this legacy streaming infrastructure? This isn't right, you know? And basically I just got super pumped about it and fired up. And I was like, right, okay, let's figure out how to pursue this. And then a few months later, Sam at Wavelake reached out and said, this is what we're doing. With Wavelake, it's music only platform, and you know, encouraged me to try it out. And then I just started uploading my stuff to there, and I thought, right, well, from now on I'm going to make a bit of a stand and say, right, music gets uploaded early to Wavelake. I'll probably at some point have some Wavelake exclusive, Wavelake only content, you know, or RSS only content that isn't on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever. And I will just keep encouraging my fans to go and listen over there, because like, even if they can't send me sats yet, if they're just engaging with the app, because they've got a mobile app now. And I think that was a big barrier for a lot of people. It's just a web player for ages. People aren't really used to listening to music on web players. So now they've got an app. Well, it's still in beta at the moment, but it's going to be, the full release is in a few months. So once that's really out there, I'm just going to encourage people to, there you go.
Yeah. I've played around with the app. I'm actually very impressed with the app. I downloaded it via an APK, I think, after I tweeted out of them, how do I get this without having to sign into the Google store, because I've got a de-Googled phone. But it's just a very clean running app. Like, it just works. It does what it's supposed to do. And it's incredible to me that it's actually streaming over RSS as well, and just how smooth the whole experience is. And then you can see, obviously, like, the top tracks, you know, like High Gravity, 351,000 sats, man. Like, it's nothing to sneeze at. I was splashing around this afternoon. Empty passenger seat got the approval from the smallest of the tribe. They always, I think they've got music in their bones or something, that they always start to move whenever there's like a good bit of music on. And that was the one that did it, man. So as far as I'm concerned, you got the seal of approval from the young tribe member.
Nice one.
Which is really nice. How was that journey of sort of discovering Bitcoin and going down that sort of rabbit hole with the Bitcoin standard and all of that that entails? At what point did you sort of, were you able to find a tunnel back to your music life and then connect those two dots? Were you, like, for a little while there, just going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and you sort of forgot everything else, like a lot of people do? Or were you always, I guess it's because it's part of your gig and that's what you do for a living, it's your life, so creating music and all that sort of stuff. But were you just like blinders on, what is this Bitcoin thing? And then at one point you were just like, well, hang on a minute, like, how do I somehow connect these dots? Because that's what a lot of people tend to do, is like they have like this past life before Bitcoin and then this post life before Bitcoin, and they get to a certain point within the rabbit hole where they try and find a tunnel back to their old life, but with improvements, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. So I'd say that's true for me. I did go really deep into it, and maybe the music side of things suffered a bit because I was just so obsessed with like trying to figure out what it was. And I've just found it really fascinating. And it took up a lot of my attention. I mean, I still listen to maybe too many podcasts. I still listen to more podcasts than I should. Should be listening to more music. But yeah, I mean, like, it's just great when the value for value thing popped up and I was like, oh yeah, okay, so now this is how we connect both worlds. They're just very complementary, and it's like, it's just the saying, isn't it? Bitcoin fixes this. You know, you got a problem, Bitcoin fixes this. And I really honestly do think it fixes a lot of problems with the current music infrastructure, like the streaming infrastructure, the royalty infrastructure. It just kind of like sorts it all out, because like the streaming and the payment are one and the same thing. They're in, you know, you don't have all this like, all these intermediaries and all this problem, because like Spotify has had to, and other streaming platforms, they've had to just evolve the way they have because the back end is fiat. It's banking. It's like, you know, ACH, all these things. It's like the front end of music, the UI, the front end is like super slick. You can listen to any song in the world, anytime, just with a touch of a button. Like, we've gotten there, but the back end of like actually sorting it all out is stuck in the 70s or something. It's stuck pre-internet. And those two things have kind of, they've come to a bit of a head now where it's like, they're kind of incompatible, and it's like, it's fracturing, it's breaking. So now all we're doing is we're updating the back end, the kind of payment system, to be as, you know, as slick as the front end. That's the way I think about it.
Yep. And because it's programmable, and you've got those splits that literally you can put splits in, and when the payment is coming through, it literally in real time will split to whoever you nominate into those wallets, which is just phenomenal and mind-boggling to think of in the first instance. But it's just a value prop for a record company. You know, they can still get their taste like instantly. Instantly, they can get remitted instantly, so the artist can get whatever deal they've got percentage-wise, the record company, the A&R, like literally everyone in the crew can just be paid down to the nth degree, like instantly. Yep. And you don't even have to do invoicing and period of 30 days and this stuff and have arguments with promoters after the gig because they haven't paid you properly or on time or whatever. I mean, it just obfuscates so much nonsense and removes so yep. many middlemen and just removes the gatekeeping. Because that's what it is. I mean, you hear of old stories back in the 50s and 60s with a lot of those black artists which just got completely screwed out of deals for providing all of this high-quality, incredible music that's timeless and got paid nothing. I was watching a video the other day, the Aim and Break, that famous Aim and Break. Do you know that one, the drum break? It's like used in over 6,000 different, it's been sampled over 6,000 times. It's in like any right. decent hip hop song ever. And it right. comes from a gospel album or something. And it's just a small break that have just DJs have pulled it out and cut it and mixed it and all the rest of it. But the person that did that timeless piece of music, that little bit of magic, effectively died as an unknown homeless person. Like, it's just fucked up.
Yeah, you know? It's mental.
And they've provided so much joy and pleasure to the world.
Yeah, like imagine if every time that sample was used, their lightning address.
Can you imagine?
Was just dead. Like even 5% or 1% of all the sats or whatever.
It could be 0.01%. It wouldn't matter, but
it would just add up, wouldn't it?
Would
over time. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest like fear any labels would get coming into this would just be the idea that it's voluntary, like, and people don't have to send the sats, like. But like this is the hard bit to explain to people about RSS, is that it's open. So as soon as your music touches RSS, like it's an open protocol. So anyone can pull from that, you know, pull that feed into their app. You can't silo it. You can't put it in a walled garden. And like, and that's kind of the point. Like,
yeah, it's free, I mean, and open source.
Yeah, I guess at the moment that the labels are still kind of like in the picture, because they own a lot of Spotify. As far as I know, like the labels are bought into Spotify.
Of course.
So they're kind of entrenched in that, but like the artists still getting nothing. So I think this push is going to come from the artists to say, you know, there's a better way of doing something. Let's try it out. I think it's just going to be an experiment. They're going to try it and put one song on there or one album and just see how it compares. Like, how much am I getting from this compared to Spotify?
Yeah.
Like,
and yeah, then, it'll happen and people will iterate. I just wanted to just quickly, it's the Winstons were this soul band from Washington, D.C. And the fella that played the break was Richard Lewis Spencer. Anyway. People should check that out. Just type in Aim and Break in Google, and like, it's literally in every decent song, hip hop song especially. The idea that the record companies will sort of, it'll just be like everything in the fiat world. It'll just get kicking and screaming, because this is just where the value is going. This is where the market is moving. And because it's frictionless and it's so much easier and it's just better, eventually, the more people that see that value prop, the light bulb switches on and they're like, cool, well, I'll just do this now. And that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Particularly
and maybe the pressure will come as well from what we mentioned earlier. Like, the sats are going to be harder to get over time because keep going up in value. So obviously, the earlier you move to the new system,
exactly,
the value, the better it's going to be in the long run. And you're building a bigger fan base earlier on in that world.
This
and
is where people, some of the FUD lines around Bitcoin, where people will get salty and annoyed because, you know, they won't be able to afford to buy Bitcoin, you know, beyond 100K or whatever it is, right? And, you know, it's a high price. But the point is, go out and like earn it. Go out and create value. And then request to be paid in Bitcoin or demand to be paid in Bitcoin. And then you'll get your hands on some sats if the stuff is good enough. Like, that's so simple. And you're proving that right now, like already, as I said, 350,000 sats or something for that top song, which escapes me at the moment. Sorry. High Gravity, Kraken tune. I actually was thinking while I was listening that I think a little bit more pedal steel guitar and a little bit more leaning into that country vibe that you've got going on, I think that would be cool. I'd be down with that.
I'm kind of like, I'm taking a step back from the pedal steel because I used to put it on everything. If you listen to my first
put it couple on everything. Of EPs. It should be on everything. It's Modern Country it's has so no tempting. Pedal steel. It should be on everything.
Very tempting because it sounds so good. Uh-huh. Like I was just kind of going a bit overkill on it and I was like, I don't want this to just be my sound. Like I've got to take a step back.
Fair
but,
play.
But no, I do love it. Especially like playing with the pedal steel play live. It's great.
Do you play the pedal steel?
No.
It looks like such a tricky instrument.
Yeah, you've got to be a certain kind of person to pull that off. Like
you've got to grow up in Nashville.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I mean, look, there you go. Like there's like a ground zero for a sort of an interconnection between Bitcoin and music industry. And if you look at it from sort of the perspective of country music in Nashville, which to my mind is actually still producing decent music relative to everything else, actually songwriting. And, you know, there's like a resurgence in country music. A lot of people are starting to listen to country. Obviously, a lot of it's bro country. And it's that shit that like is just indiscernible to every other piece of shit song out there. But I think that there's like this yearning for actual songs with a verse and a chorus and something like a hook and something to latch on to and sing along to rather than just be mumbled at, you know?
Real songs. Real songs.
What
song
a revelation. I mean,
like a lot of stuff like you're saying that you hear on the radio is kind of the musical equivalent of junk food, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just high time junk preference. Food, shit.
Yeah, junk food to your ears. High turnover, high time preference. It's not
good, man. It's not good. And a lot of like the festivals, a buddy of mine sent me a link to a Twitter thread by a person that was bemoaning the fact that Aussie festivals had sort of all but disappeared, right? And all throughout the 90s, there was these giant festivals like Big Day Out and Homebake and Livid and a few others, where a lot of indie bands and a lot of, alternative music was exposed to a whole bunch of people. And that has all kind of gone away because, I don't know, it's too expensive or whatever, but there's still some of those festivals around, but the content, it's not that appealing. Maybe it's because I'm just not in that demographic anymore and maybe I just got to make peace with that, and that's cool. I noticed that like the timelessness of like the boomer era music is still, that's where it's all sort of like the Byron Bay Blues and Roots Festival, which happened recently. That is one of the bigger festivals in the circuit in Australia these days. It's not these Big Day Outs and these other giant festivals. I mean, obviously you've got Glastonbury, but even Glastonbury, you know, it's all this co-option and this corporatization and this watering down of the product that just is so depressing, right?
I guess music has always had tastemakers and gatekeepers and people that say, right, this person's going to be on this festival. I'm going to make sure that this person's getting played on this show, sort of thing. But I think like the market did have much more of a voice back in the, you know, pre-internet music days, because like people would actually go and part with their money for a record, and that was a vote that this is good, I'm going to buy this. Whereas now like a stream doesn't have the same weight, it doesn't have the same significance. There's no economic tie to a stream in the same way as there was with a physical purchase of an album or record, whatever. And especially people can, you know, wash their own numbers. There's like streaming farms that people pay for. It's like you know, people paying for follows on Facebook or Instagram or all these things. People can stream their own music and just get that stream up. They couldn't do that with sats. Well, not really. No. I mean, you could kind of send yourself sats, but you know, Wavelake can take 10%, so you're just paying them. So it's like, you can't really fake it in the same way, or it's not as easy. So I think there'll be a much more, like, there'll be a stronger market signal of what people actually value, people's preferences, you know, just a stronger signal, because it's like actually tied to some economic value.
Right.
Sats. So it's going to be interesting. They've got the top 40 charts in Wavelake now, where you can see the most boosted songs. And that will just act as a signal for, like, just a good filter for people to be like, right, what's everyone listening to? What's everyone actually sending sats to? Maybe I should listen to that. Oh yeah, it's good. I'll send some sats. Mm-hmm. Like, it will be a better filter, I think, for stuff, hopefully.
Well, it's the economic incentive, man. Once you've got skin in the game, as you said, like, it's a very passive thing to do. It's just to stream a song or an album. I remember, like, it's just not the same as waiting for that day when the album's on sale. I can remember back in the day, Metallica's Saint Anger was due to be released, and there was I think it was like a video store, of all things. Like, I'm dating myself here now, but, you know, when we used to go to the video store on a Friday night, I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but, like, that's...
Yeah, we had a Blockbuster. You mean like Blockbuster?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we had Video Easy here in Australia, or Civic Video. But you'd go there on Friday night. But anyway, I remember I was in this video shop, and they had the CD in the rack for sale, but it was like a week or two before it was meant to go on sale.
Right.
And I don't know, I didn't buy it because I didn't want to ruin I didn't want to listen to it before it was sort of sanctioned, you know, by the artist or whatever. And I have that clear picture in my head of, like, because I could have listened to the album for a week out. I mean, people rag on that album as not being their best, but I don't know, man. There's some pretty good songs on that. I don't know. But anyway, the point is that event, that moment of, like, walking into the record store and buying your copy of the album and taking it into the car, throwing it on, turning it up, actually feeling it, you know, immersing yourself in this new music. It's not the same when an artist drops an album on Spotify, like Kanye or something, and you can just kind of dial it in whenever it's convenient for you. And I've noticed my relationship to that album is just not the same as what it was when I had skin in the game.
100%. You know? I agree. And I don't think we're ever going to get that back, that feeling, like you said, of waiting and it building up the excitement of a new release. When I put my debut album out this time last year, and I went on my first headline tour around the UK, and I did make a point of only having physicals on that actual tour, and releasing it as online once the tour had finished, so that the people that actually came to a show were the ones that first could get to hear it, but they had to buy an actual CD.
That's clever.
Did
it work? I think people. Do you think people appreciated that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people wanted to hear it before anyone else could hear it, and it kind of gave it a bit of exclusivity. Yeah,
see, people love that.
It rewarded the fans for coming to the show, and I think it was a good move, and I think, you know, people are going to keep doing that. But I think the second best thing after that, once you've gone digital, is tying it to sats, to value, because it's weird, but when I send a song, some sats on Wavelate, I almost appreciate it more in a weird way than if I just listened to it for free on Spotify. I don't know why. It's like I know I've given that song something,
mm-hmm.
and it cost me something to get that. And it almost, it's a weird thing. It ties this, like, appreciation and value to that song.
Yeah, it's like it. I know what you feel like. Well, you've got skin in the game. You've made a vote with your wallet that this is worth your time and energy, because that time and energy came from elsewhere and you've now paid it forward to another artist and you've just declared your appreciation for the time and energy that they've spent. I always find it remarkable how, like, you could go and buy like a best of say Bob Marley, right? And it's, you know, $20 or whatever. I don't know, what's that, like £10, £12, right? You can buy his entire, like, the amount of time, energy, dedication, thought that went into producing even just one of those songs on that best of. And you can buy that whole thing, that whole experience, that whole time span for $20 and chuck it on your CD. Like, that, it's wild to me that marginal cost of production. I mean, it's not that I want to pay more for the music, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that iceberg is so fucking big underneath the surface of the water, and we just get to have that little bite at the top, and it's pretty fucking cost effective.
It is. And then, like, but I guess the problem is then when Spotify take it to the extreme where it's free, you know, then it's a problem. But, like, the idea behind something like Wavelake I Like is that I can just go stream an album, like, a few times, and I'm like, man, this is so good. Right, I'm going to send this person, like, $10 worth of sats. And then, like, guilt-free, I can just, like, rinse that album as much as I want, because I know I've technically paid for it, essentially, like what it would have cost for a physical. And you can't really do that with any of the streaming platform.
It's funny to me, like, I remember, I don't know if you recall when Radiohead released In Rainbows, they did a similar thing where they just put it up online and you could just download it for free if you wanted to, or value for value. That's what it was. It was value for value. Back in 2007.
It was more successful than, like, the other releases, right?
Right on.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just like a perfect precedent for this entire shift. And if you just take that and scale it to indie artists and other people that may not have all of that infrastructure behind them, like, that just changes the game. It's just phenomenal. How has discovering Bitcoin changed you?
It's kind of, it's given me a new, it sounds quite cheesy, but, like, new hope, like, just optimism for the future. Because, like, you know, the world's pretty screwed up at the moment, right? And especially, like, just forgetting everything else, but in music particularly, the pitch is pretty bleak. Especially for an indie artist, it's like the biggest uphill battle ever to even just, like, become relatively known, never mind actually monetize what you're doing. So from that perspective, it's given me, you know, an optimistic outlook of, like, what is going to be possible when this starts to scale and adoption increases. It's just got me really excited that it's just such early days with this. I just want to be part of it. Yeah.
If your music, does it strive you to write better songs and compose better songs? And it's almost like a nice carrot to keep going. You know, I guess if you didn't have Bitcoin, like a lot of people, if they didn't, I mean, you know, there's just this huge existential nihilistic, you know, outlook on everything, and you're just specific to music. If you're a musician, that's just, you get to a certain point and you're just like, you know what, like, it's too much effort. Like, the risk reward is just not there.
It just grinds a lot of people down to the point where they throw in the towel. And like you said, it's just very nihilistic, and it's because it's just so, seems so hopeless. Whereas this idea and this technology is kind of opening up a different avenue, a different path that you can choose as an independent artist. You know, which way do you want to go? Do you want to take the path that it's currently on and just keep, or do you want to take control of your own work and open yourself up to, like, listeners all over the world? I feel like since I've joined way, Blake. I've got listeners in loads of different countries that I just would never have reached before.
It's cool.
And was in Madeira, for the Bitcoin conference over there recently. Like what? Like 12 months prior to that, I was playing to a group of Bitcoiners. I was playing to like 8 Bitcoiners in like a little bar near where I am in Manchester. Like, and 12 months later, I'm playing to hundreds of Bitcoiners on this beautiful island with like Theo Katzman headlining and, you know, all these people in the crowd that I've watched on podcasts for years. Like, where does that happen, man? Like, it's crazy. So I think you've just kind of got to take a chance and just, I don't know, like just take a step into the unknown. But it's all very exciting.
it's phenomenal. As you say, like you couldn't have predicted that. And it's not to say that it's Bitcoin specifically, although it, you know, this is this sort of hard to pass comp sci versus sort of engineering side of the brain with the liberal arts side. But it's just neutral protocol, just enabling us to transfer value across space and time. But yet it has this transformative effect on people that come into contact with it. And we're just seeing an example now. We've been hearing an example for the last hour or so of how it's affected you as a musician, as a creative person, but just apply it to anything else, any other creative pursuit, whether it is literally computer science, engineering, because that's a creative pursuit. We're all creative beings that have been put on this earth to be creative, to contribute value to one another. Not just to fill out forms and move shit around and sell widgets and this, that, and the other. Like, it's just, that's the tedious fiat thing. And there's still a need for all of that stuff, but maybe one day we can just automate it all. I don't know. And we'll get to that point of leisure that we've been promised for so long, when email was supposed to reduce the amount of time and energy spent on stuff, and it's just exponentially increased it. We might get to a point where the best sandwich maker can concentrate on being the best sandwich maker. You know, like those Japanese spots where like the guy is just like the best at soba noodles, and that's all he does is just, he makes soba noodles all day because he's so good at it and people love it and they just come and buy all these soba noodles. It's like, that's not my jam. But if ever I need soba noodles and I find myself nearby his place, I'm going to go there. Right, we need more of those people pursuing what they're good at in this. Yeah, life. And
it frees you up. Like, you get to a state in Bitcoin where you're just really zen, because it's like, you're putting it into long-term savings. You've got the bigger picture of what's happening, and it kind of just takes a lot of baggage off you mentally and frees you up. So, like you say, focus on what you're doing and just be the best you can be at one particular thing, and you're not kind of like having to worry about all these other things, that these are the problems that fiat brings along with it.
This is a great example of show don't tell. I mean, this is what you're just out there showing, don't telling. So as much as this is a difficult question to answer, but I think you bring a unique perspective, and particularly with the crowd and the sort of the culture that you play in, because you are not necessarily trying to orange pill people. And as you said at the top of the conversation, you're just going out and doing your thing with respect to creating music. And then you're leveraging this tool to help you continue to do that and make it even more viable than it otherwise would be. And so then when your peers see you doing this and see some of the response, like, have you had any artist friends, musician friends ask you, like, how the fuck did you get a gig in Madeira talking, like, what was that about?
No, like, still nothing. I'm waiting for the message, like, from musician friends, like, so what's this wave like thing again?
What?
Like, what is it about? Yeah, it's so weird. Like, I don't want to push it on people too hard. You know what I mean? I don't want to turn people off, but I do want to shake people and be like, God damn it, just take a look at this. Like, you just put one song on there. What have you got to lose?
Yeah, man.
You know, But it's just, yeah, it's just really strange. I think, I don't know, maybe it's a mixture of, like, people think it's too good to be true, must be a scam. Like, oh, I don't understand it. I'm not techie enough, even though you don't have to be. It's like, it's easier than uploading to YouTube. You know, it's crazy. So, I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe it's just not big enough yet. Maybe if we have this conversation in a year or two, it'll be a different story. But I'm not going to let that deter me. I'm just going to keep plodding along, same message, trying to explain to people what it's about, how it works, how it's better. And just like you say, trying to show it myself. You can shout about it all day long, but if I can, what's more impressive is if I can point to my own music on there and say, look, this is how much I've made for people that like my songs. You could do it too. I've not done anything particularly special. I've just uploaded it and just tried to nurture the fan base. And yeah, that's all it is really. So,
well, I can tell you, and here's some alpha. I have uploaded some music to Wavelake. I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but just know that there's some music composed by me up on Wavelake somewhere. And it's super easy to upload and to just get your, you get like an NSAC, kind of like Nostr. You just get like a private key. And I mean, the next evolution you can see with something like Primal, where the wallet is within the app on this social network layer. I mean, it would make total sense. You've got these new iterations where everything is just interconnected, so you can tweet out, note out, whatever it is on Nostr. Like, it's just it's just endless horizons of possibilities and opportunity. And you can't say that about fiat equivalents. You just can't say that, you know. So,
I mean, the Nostr thing is just a whole different universe again. It's like all these technology, like, we're in a really special time in history, aren't we? I guess
remarkable,
like, all these technologies are all coming together in a certain way that's just kind of going to make the future that we just can't even imagine yet. It's
it's phenomenal. Yeah, it's cool. All right, last question, man. What does Bitcoin mean to you?
What does Bitcoin mean to me? It just means better future. It means better future. It does mean self-responsibility. So taking that upon yourself to better yourself. Because, I don't know, it's like you get the value that you give. There you go. You get the value that you put out back.
Tenfold in many cases.
Step up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it puts your own destiny back in your hands, which is great. It's kind of like you've no one else to rely on, but it's very empowering. So,
how can anyone listening to that not be even remotely curious about finding out a little bit about Bitcoin or becoming a Bitcoiner? I don't know. Discovering Bitcoin. That's the whole point of this damn show. Joe, thank you so much for spending some scarce time, finite energy, telling us the tale of how you discovered Bitcoin and indulging me on a lot of my music questions and how all that works. I think we sort of touched on the spine. I sort of tried to discipline myself back to the spine of the questions of the show, but I was more interested in talking to you about music and how that's affected the way that you approach this now. So appreciate you indulging me, man. And cheers.
Thanks for having me on, DJ. Had a lot of fun. Be good.